We're going to spend the next couple of segments talking music. And when I think of music, I only think of one person. One person. And that is Jesus. Gordon Keith from our morning music. Jesus is second.
Where's Mozart?
Thanks for having me, guys.
Thanks for joining us, man. Really appreciate it.
Sure.
When I brought this topic up to you, you seemed pretty excited about this because I told you why I thought about this because of the alarm on my phone that I have. I say a little prayer from Aretha Franklin, and that is a cover from the Dionne Warwick. I say a little prayer, and I like both versions, but Aretha added that little stank to it that puts it above the original version. Now, this is this is good stank.
Young Aretha stank, not old Aretha stank.
That's a just big difference.
The word.
Huge difference. So
young Aretha Franklin? Pretty hot.
You know?
That's the point.
Yes, and pretty she... Hot. Enjoyed the pleasures of the younger man. She did not hide that fact
even
whatsoever.
In her old age?
Yes, even in her older, plumper age, she still enjoyed the younger man and looked for it all the time. Anyway.
That's a disturbing note. Thank you.
I wanted everyone to think of a couple of songs where they like the cover more than the original. And doing the research for this and trying to put this together, I think I can do this segment maybe for a month straight because you start thinking of different songs and
no kidding.
And it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know which ones to choose as far as trying to put this together. So I do have a few that I will present to you guys, and then we'll go in a particular order. Gordon, I want you to go out to me, and then maybe in the next segment we'll get Norm and Saroy because we all did this. So I didn't want to pick on one particular group because I do think you can do a particular segment on this group and the covers that people wanted to do of their songs because they were so good. And that group is the Beatles. And I will play this song from the Beatles, and here we go. This song, classic, it's upbeat. Hey, you know, I want to hold your hand. Let's go. This is great. It's well written. It's so summery.
Yeah, it always seemed like a kid's song to me. It's not one of my favorite Beatles songs, but to each his own.
Okay, I can see how it's a little kiddie. You know,
it's about the simplest song.
I want to hold your hand.
Yeah,
of all time.
And I am not a Beatles expert, so if you start doing a deep dive into their catalog, I will probably only tell you I know the hits, and I don't know anything else. So if I would do a deep dive and listen to other Beatles tunes, I would probably say that this is maybe not one of their best. But right now, I can tell you that this is one that I enjoy.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with it at all. So this is the original. Now, I didn't know that this guy covered it until I was listening one day to The Hardline. And one of my favorite artists covered the Beatles' I Want to Hold Your Hand, and it's Al Green. So let's listen to Al Green's cover of I Want to Hold Your Hand.
Yeah, we got the feeling now. Al Green. We got the feeling now.
Shut up, Al Green.
Oh, boy. That'll... All right, man. God damn.
So I think Al Green elevates.
God, that's badass. I don't know if I've ever heard that.
Same. That's incredible, and it annihilates the Beatles.
Yeah, it
version.
Does. It truly does.
See, I didn't know how popular Al Green's version was, and like I said, probably it was maybe 6 months ago that I realized that he did this, and now it comes up on my playlist a lot, and I enjoy it every time. It is awesome.
Somehow the Al Green song seems suggestive of a deeper meaning of the lyrics.
What do you think hand is a euphemism for?
But the Beatles song does sound like a kid's song.
And this doesn't sound like a kid's song.
No.
With Al Green.
This moves.
Yes, putting his thing on it.
It's almost as if this has some stank on it.
Oh, yeah. This is a whole lot of stank to a song that was good and elevated it to being really, really good. So that's probably the first one I thought about when I thought about this bit I wanted to do. So let's go to one more. This is a cover of a song that I didn't know was a cover, and it was Roberta Flack and Killing Me Softly. His fingers. I didn't realize someone did this
singing
before.
My life,
yeah.
With his words, killing me softly with his song, killing me softly with his song, telling my whole life with his words, killing me softly with his song.
Whoa.
This song is so good, and I think I didn't realize how good it was until I put it in here to play it back today. It's like, man, this is... I almost hesitate to say there's a cover that's better than this. This is so good. Her voice is so smooth.
I heard he had a style, and so I came to see him to listen for a while.
So now you think of that, and of course, this is the hit from... The Fugees, and I'll get into this. This is Lauryn Hill putting her spin on Killing Me Softly, The Fugees, and it's awesome.
This is why Clef Refuge cries well. Little bass sitting up here on the bass. While I'm on this road, I got my girl L. One time. Hey, yo, L, you know you got the lyrics.
I heard he sang a good song.
If she hadn't gone kind of batty, she would have been one of the best. Her first album, The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, is one you can put on, and every track is her with one of the greatest voices I've ever heard throwing down. But she, I think, went certifiably crazy.
Hey, what'd she do? How'd she go crazy?
See, she was always late to shows, like ridiculously late to where sometimes she may have not even shown up. I think she got with one of the Marley sons and had a ton of kids. And just, I think after a hit like The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, it's kind of hard to follow up. And she may have even tried to put out some more music and it just didn't work. And you'll never get anything like that. So that's the basis of what I wanted to do. So I kind of wanted to throw it to you, Gordon, so you can put out a couple of songs to see which ones you like.
Gordon, let me ask a question, a real quick question to Donnie before this. Donnie, which did you like better there, The Fugees or Roberta Flack?
Yes, I love the cover. The Fugees version. Roberta Flack is great, and it sounds great, but The Fugees put that little bit of oomph on it to elevate it, to take it to that next level.
Did you realize that Roberta Flack recorded a song that had already been recorded?
Yeah, I know that's a cover. I just found out that was a cover of a cover.
Yes, okay. Okay, Gordo, go ahead.
All right, so we go to 1930 for this song. The original song was written by Hoagy Carmichael.
Yes.
Who was an actor and a songwriter, and he did a bunch of stuff. And the rumor was that he wrote the song about his sister. But in his biography, he says that his saxophone player said that he ought to write a song about the state of Georgia. And so he sits up at night. He was going to Indiana University, And he and his roommate, or he and his friend that went to Indiana University, stayed up all night and wrote this song. And his friend wrote the lyrics. His friend's name was Stuart Gorrell. And his friend writes the lyrics for this very famous song and then never wrote another lyric ever in his life again. He turned, went into banking and never wrote anything else. But this is the original intro to the original version of the song. Doesn't sound too familiar, does it?
Nope.
No.
Hearing it that way. But when you hear it this way, on sports.
Georgia.
Whoa.
Georgia. Georgia.
The great Ray Charles recorded Georgia on My Mind, released it on his album in, I think it was 1970. Just an old sweet song.
Keeps Georgia on my mind.
No, 1960, the genius hits The Road, Ray Charles' version of Georgia on My Mind.
That sounds nothing like that original. That's awesome.
Nothing like this song. Originally written in 1930, but Ray Charles' version in 1960 is the one that gets named, I think it was the 44th greatest song of all time by Rolling Stone magazine. Ray Charles' version. Moonlight through the Pines. What a great line.
You know, Gordon, I hate to make myself sound old, but Hoagy Carmichael.
Don't set that softball up on a tee like that. What's wrong with you?
Hoagy Carmichael had a wonderful career as a very, very noted entertainer and appeared on the earliest TV shows I remember seeing as a kid, and he was a star in his own right.
Yeah, and he wrote, I think he wrote Stardust, too, and several other big hits. He wrote quite a few. And speaking of Stardust, Willie Nelson recorded Georgia on My Mind that was on his album, Stardust. Yep. And Willie's version is also incredibly awesome. But the Ray Charles version of Georgia on My Mind, certainly better than the original, his cover of it. Okay, my second song. Do we have time or do we need a break?
You know what? Let's come back on the other side and do that, and we'll get Norm and Soroy's also. It's Gordon Keith joining us. Hey, music next. Man from the mountain. It is 11:15, Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310. The Ticket. We are joined by Gordon Keith, and we are talking music. We are talking about the songs where we like the cover better than the original. Gordon left off with Georgia on My Mind from Ray Charles as he's loving the cover more than an original, and I throw it back to Gordon Keith.
All right, now for the second song, it was written in 1961 and recorded by a band called the Top Notes. They didn't really get a big hit with that.
That's generic enough, isn't it? The Top Notes?
Then it was recorded by the Isley Brothers in 1962. And the Isley Brothers were actually, their version of it was produced by the guy who wrote the song. Now, the Top Notes version, the original version, was produced by Phil Spector, the famous producer. Mm. But Burt Burns, one of the songwriters, felt that Phil Spector had ruined the song. And so he produced an Isley Brothers song version that he thought was much closer to the one that he had envisioned. And the Isley Brothers had a nice hit with it. It was their first hit since, what was it, Shout? What did they do? I can't remember the one that
they did Twist and Shout, right?
Twist and Shout.
Yeah, they did Twist and Shout, but
you're talking about,
I'm trying to think of the hit they had right before it. Yeah,
okay,
right.
They
hadn't had a hit in like 3 years since Shout had established them.
Okay.
So then they had a hit with this song, but it was their version of it that inspired what I think was a greater version of the song, and that is this classic by The Beatles.
Work it on out, baby. Work it on out. Work it on out. Hold it on.
Beatles at it all. Of course, all the Little Richard kind of, that stuff and the build-up. I think their version is the definitive version of the song, but they were very inspired by the Isley Brothers because that was, you know, they were huge fans.
Excuse my ignorance of the Beatles. That's Paul McCartney leading that song, right?
No, that is John Lennon singing lead.
Okay, so John Lennon, I didn't realize he had that kind of earth in his voice. That's not, that's kind of, is that a typical sound of his?
Yeah, John could really rock and yell, but then so could Paul McCartney. And they released this on their first UK album, Please Please Me. And during their recording session, they recorded that whole album in like 13 hours. And they had to leave this song until the very end because John's voice, they knew, couldn't survive too many takes of it.
As a matter of fact, they
tried to do a second take of the song, and John's voice just crapped out.
He is singing with his chest in that one. You can tell. I don't think I've ever heard them just dig into a song like that before.
Yeah. And he also had a cold at the time and was sucking on cough drops and drinking milk and doing everything he could to try to get his voice well enough for this song. So there you go, Twist and Shout by the Beatles. Better than the original. I don't know if y'all want to hear a little bit of the Isley Brothers version of it.
Sure.
Here, just a few moments. Here it is on Sports. Levels kind of all over the place on the vocals.
Right.
And their version was definitely an improvement over the Top Notes version, which is just bad in my opinion.
Not even one of worthy of playing is that bad. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not gonna waste your time with that.
I thought it was the other way around.
Party version.
Yeah, I thought the Beatles first and then the Isley Brothers, but it's the reverse. Okay.
Yeah, it's the reverse. And the Beatles, I want to say that, let me see if I wrote this note down. The Beatles' version of it was their only million-selling record of a cover song. So all the other songs that the Beatles did, you know, they had written. And it was their only million-selling cover song. And it was the only Beatles cover song to reach the top 10 on the national charts. It failed to hit number one. Do you know why?
No.
They were kept out of the number one spot with Twist and Shout because they had the number one spot with Can't Buy Me Love. They denied themselves.
Another number one hit.
Another number one hit.
So those damn Beatles.
That's us. Okay, now then we were supposed to do three each, right?
Go right ahead.
Okay. So this next one was a hit for two different artists, but I think the second artist gave the defining version of it. And man, do you even have to introduce this one? Here you go. On Sports.
Such a signature tune.
Oh my gosh. I mean, this is how good this version is. When you take an Otis Redding song and somehow make it better.
Right.
That takes a lot.
Yeah, seems impossible, like George would say, to do something like that. And she did just that.
Yeah, Otis Redding had this in 1965, and he originally wrote it as a ballad, but then he sped it up and sang it, and it didn't have near the lyrical impact when he did it. His version was just kind of about a guy who wanted respect because he earned money in the household. She takes it, makes it a female anthem, her sister's adding the backup, adding the socket to me in there. According to the guy who engineered it, he said that Carolyn, Aretha's sister, was the one who came up with the spelling out of R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, that was Aretha's sister's idea to do that.
And that song
and they
would
came
be
up
naked.
With the Sock It To Me and all that.
Yeah, it would be naked without it now that you think about it. If she didn't come up with that idea, it would still be a great song, but that just puts the punctuator right on it.
Absolutely. Yeah. The spelling of the word, the Sock It To Me's in the background, all these little curly cues that they put on it that make it iconic.
That's awesome.
She recorded it on Valentine's Day in 1967, a couple years after Otis had a hit with it.
And I can think of the conversation that they had. Hey, spell it out. And she's like, that sounds stupid. I don't want to do that. No, just do it and try it, and it'll work. I'm telling you. And then she did. It's like, oh, all right. Let's keep it in there. Now add the Sock It To Me. Come on, now let's go.
But you're exactly right in that this was extremely hard to do because there's been so many fantastic versions, cover songs, done of other people's originals. And, you know, narrowing down the list was darn near impossible. All of these musical segments we've been doing during the COVID lockup, you know, we've been doing them every Tuesday with that list of band you love, band you hate, mm-hmm. band you wish you saw. It's very hard to narrow it down. I have honorable mentions here, but I'm not going to do them because I fear that you guys may have them on your list.
And I feel like I can do this for a month straight because you can come up with different songs because there are so many. The list is so great, and I think we're just scratching the surface of some of the bigger hits that you could think of a lot more. So Gordon had his list of three. I did a couple. Let's throw it to Norm so he can do a song, and then, Gordon, we're going to carry it over and have Norm finish his list, and then we'll hear from Soroy in the next segment if you can stick around. So
cool.
Let's get to Norm.
You know, sometimes you cover a song that a lot of people never heard, and a big group comes and picks it up, or a big singer comes and picks it up and turns it into a hit. In fact, Gordon, you had the genesis of the Twist and Shout from a Top Notes, which sounds like the name of the high school jazz band they put together in a garage in Burleson, to the Isley Brothers, and then to the Beatles. I mean, my God, what a progression musically. Well, this song came out in 1969 and was covered in 1970. That is very fast to do a cover, especially when the first group that put it out, people heard it and thought, that's great. Here's the original that came out in 1969. That in 1969, and people liked it. I mean, it's not like people thought, oh, who is this? Creedence Clearwater put out a really good song. In 1970, it was released by Ike and Tina Turner, and it sounded pretty different.
Every now and then, I think you might like to hear something from us. Nice and easy. But there's just one thing, you see. We never, ever do nothing nice and easy. We always do it nice and rough. And we're going to take the beginning of this song and do it easy. But then we're going to do the finish rough. It's the way we do Proud Mary. Rolling, rolling, rolling on river. Listen to the story now. Left a good job in the city, working for
to be in the camp of Tina Turner being a bit overrated until you listen to some of the early tunes, and her voice was so good. There's a song called Fool in Love that I could listen to, I don't know, probably 10 times in a row before I get tired of it. Her voice is so spectacular in this thing.
I saw Tina Turner in concert, and she and I had a moment.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I snuck over to the side stage where you couldn't even really see the whole stage, and she would eventually dance her way over straight to the edge of the stage, and there was, like, nobody over there. And she looked right down at me with a spotlight behind her and did her little sparkly dress butt shake while she was singing.
And it was just for you, right?
It was just for me and Tina.
Mike, congratulations on being one of the 13,000 males that had a moment that night.
Yeah, I turned a corner on Tina Turner. Her voice is spectacular.
But didn't Ike used to beat her with a coat hanger?
Well, pretty much anything that was in sight, he did.
You know, but guys, the two songs, one, they're by the way, they're the same lyrics. One is a rock song, and one is a soul song.
That's the definition of putting some stank on it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. She really gets it cranked up here, too.
Yeah. Okay, we're going to come back on the other side, listen to Norm's other song, and then Mike Soroy joins in and tells us what covers he loves. Gordon Keith is with us also. The Ticket. Thank you, Mike. We are in the middle of bar music. Joined by Gordon Keith, we are discovering or playing covers that we like better than the original. I put my list out there. Gordon did also. We are in the middle of Norm. And then after Norm finishes his last song, we will throw it to Mike Soroy. So, Norm, take it away.
It's very difficult, very unusual, to have a boxcar hit, number one, to then be covered and for it to become a number one. And let me tell you, this song I've chosen, lads, is two different stages of my life, okay? The first one recorded came out when I was 30. And the cover came out 18 years later when I was 48. So you're at different stages of your life. First, let's go back to 1974 and hear the original that went to number one.
If I should stay, I would only be in your way, so I'll go. But I know I'll think of you each step of the way.
Dolly Parton, 1974, beautiful song. She has a voice that's almost unlike any other that recorded songs. And this song went to number one, and it stayed there. But it was 18 years later, and you guys' premise this morning is, do you like the cover better than the original? 18 years later, Whitney Houston took it up another notch or two. Gordon, you're the music expert in this group for sure. Those are two spectacular, different but spectacular voices.
Yes, and I have I'm kind of partial to Dolly's version, which is interesting because I don't remember Dolly's version. When I was growing up, I thought that was a Whitney Houston song. Whitney Houston had a hit with it.
Yeah.
And then I found out about Dolly's version and went back and really fell in love with that. But what's interesting is that it almost became Whitney Houston's signature song.
Yes.
Despite the fact that Dolly had a huge hit with the song.
Yeah, and you know, you go, the pureness of Whitney Houston's voice is amazing, but Dolly Parton's version, her ability to move around on notes is just incredible.
I heard Dolly's version for the first time yesterday.
Really? You kidding me?
This game made me aware of it. I didn't even know it was a cover until yesterday. I don't know how I missed it, and I've listened to it a lot of times since yesterday. I think it's incredible, but not when held up to Whitney's version. This is like epic.
Well,
of the last 20
years.
Yeah,
what's strange, it's exactly right in that the word you used for it. Whitney's version is epic. And Dolly's version is kind of intimate.
It's sweet.
You know?
Yes, Dolly's version
is sweet
very
and intimate.
Sweet.
And Whitney's is stadium filling.
Right.
You know,
yep.
It's a completely different treatment of the song. But they're both incredible. And I always heard a story, and I never knew if it was true or not, that one time Dolly showed up at a Whitney show, like in Nashville or something. And they had not really talked or spoken since Whitney had a hit. This was around the time when Whitney had the hit with the song. And asked if she could come backstage and wanted to see if Whitney had some time to meet with her and just say hi. And Whitney turned her down.
What?
That was the urban legend.
Wow.
I kind of believe it just from what you hear of Whitney. She liked some Whitney.
Being wheels off at the time.
Right.
Yeah, she was.
Which is such a shame. If you ever studied or read about or watched those documentaries about what happened in Whitney's life, what a sad life.
They tried to make her the wholesome girl, the, oh my gosh, Whitney Houston, you know, this beautiful, big voice, and she had some demons going on behind the scenes.
Yeah, she did. She was pretty tortured. And speaking of attractive women, Whitney Houston in her day may have been one of the hottest women of all time. When you compare that kind of beauty with that kind of talent, that knocks me out.
She was good looking, yeah. And then, man, the drugs and everything else just beat her up.
I know.
It did.
She started off looking like Whitney Houston and ended up looking like latter-day Tina Turner.
Yeah, latter day, her pictures scattered across the National Enquirer front page.
And the interview.
Wasn't there an incident where Bobby Brown had to?
Yes, yeah. A reality show where he had to reach up and help her with a movement of the bowel.
She was constipated due to probably opioid use, and he had to fetch her.
Come here, boy.
To do.
Come on.
Would you ever fetch to do? One of the hottest women of all time.
Only if it was totally, totally necessary for survival.
I'm asking Norm.
Oh. But if it's for Norm, then I don't know.
I don't know, buddy.
I can tell by your voice you do know.
I love you, Norm. I love you, Norm. All right, Saroy, take it away.
I'll zip through mine pretty quick. They tend to be a little newer, I think, than some of the ones you guys have played, but you've played some classics. My first one, the original, is from 1970, and a completely unnoticed release from David Bowie. It was on the B-side in 73 of the Space Oddity U.S. release and the Life on Mars U.K. release. This was put on the B-side. It was totally unknown, and I wonder if any of y'all, sans Gordon, will recognize this at all. Here's David Bowie, 1970.
Up on the stairs, we spoke of was and when, although I wasn't there.
I didn't know Bowie covered them.
Exactly. This is another one like Dolly that I learned after the fact. And then I went back and listened to this, and I borderline hate it. And I love
Bowie's
David,
version?
Yes, I love David Bowie's near the Mount Rushmore for me. Absolutely love him, but I kind of hate this song.
Because it really became Nirvana's.
This is The Man Who Sold the World. In 1974, it was covered by a Scottish singer named Lulu. It got up to number 3 on the UK singles charts, and that's what really introduced most of the world to this song. But it wasn't until 1993 Nirvana had a live performance of MTV Unplugged where this song kind of became iconic for pretty much anybody near my age. Like a simplified version of the song, more of a traditional melodic song than Bowie's, and Bowie was so out of his mind, maybe he was just on a different planet. But this is, it's more palatable, I think, and it's just beautiful.
They did it on an MTV Unplugged. Did they record it and make it a hit?
I believe this is where it's completely known
this
for.
This version,
just
I think.
Just the cover.
Okay,
And the MTV Unplugged version of Nirvana is probably their second most popular album after Nevermind, which is their big release.
Mike, when you said there was going to be a cover of a David Bowie song, I thought it was going to be our version of Space Oddity.
Gosh.
Yeah, there's nothing from a ticket stock appearing in any of our lists. Let me zip through because I'm going to kind of go Inception and go into a full circle here. My next song, here's the original. It's from that Nirvana album, Nevermind. This is In Bloom. This is a hard one to beat because it's a great tune. It was named by Rolling Stone in 2011 as number 415 on the list of 500 greatest songs of all time. One of the most, the seventh most spun song of the 90s. It was the fourth and final release on Nevermind, that big album that they released. So, great song. Most people know this, but of late, I've been sort of obsessed with a very modern cover of it, and it's from Sturgill Simpson, who is, I imagine, Gordon, you're probably a fan of, yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, really incredible dude. Again, the genre is not something that I even know that much about, but I've been pretty into Sturgill, and he does a cover of this song that I just can't get out of my head. Obviously quite different, but pretty fun listen.
Send kids for food when the changes move. Spring is here. Reproductive plan. He's a one who likes all our pretty songs. Likes to sing home and likes to shoot his gun. Don't know what it means.
It's like a perfect country song that happens to be original Nirvana. You know?
Well, he did it. I know, and he did that other great cover tune of The Promise, the When in Rome song.
Yeah.
Sorry, but I'm just thinking of the right words to say. He does a great slowed down version of that song. He has such a fantastic voice.
I love.
You know who?
Go ahead.
You know who could cover that song pretty well? Jeremy Moran.
I'm insane.
No, the voice Jeremy
I am
is,
too.
Yeah, his voice levels and inflection and tone are about the same as the voice of that singer there. I think Jeremy should cover that song.
Guys, can you still hear me? I'm deep in the well of insanity.
Turn your microphone around in that well so we can hear you clearly.
I'm deep in hypnosis, guys. I can barely see reality.
Come on back. Come back to the light.
There we go.
I do love when you can have that version, a rock version, and then he made it his own, and he made it into a complete another genre,
yeah,
and it sounds great.
Yeah, it fits perfectly right into both, and that means it's well done, I think. My last one real quick, this is one where I'm definitely not saying it's better than the original. We're going back to Bowie, and here's the original version that we all know.
It's a god of
so,
small
Life on Mars, it pretty much can't be improved upon. I get that.
But is
I'll ask for an asterisk on this one.
Daddy has told her to go.
Because I'm going for a different language. This is So George, who's a Brazilian musician.
Yes.
And he was asked to do a role in Wes Anderson's movie, The Life Aquatic, with Steve Zissou, okay? Mm-hmm. His character is a Brazilian. He sings in Portuguese, and all he does is play Bowie songs in Portuguese. It's just a cool hipster movie. I love it. I saw this dude at the Texas Theater doing the songs of David Bowie in Portuguese, and it's just incredible. I've listened to this album so many times. This is the same song in Portuguese. Beautiful.
E deixei escapar das mãos. Se o futuro assim permitir, não pretendo viver em vão. Meu amor, não estamos sós. Tem um mundo a esperar por nós. No infinito do céu azul, pode ter vida em Marte, então vem. Da sua língua, então vem, eu quero abraçar você. Seu poder vem do sol, minha medida. Então vem, vamos viver a vida. Então vem, senão eu vou perder quem sou. Vou querer me mudar para uma life on Mars.
Sweet.
Goosebumps.
Mm-hmm.
I love it. And if your cool friends from Brooklyn are flying in, you're having a dinner party, just play the Life Aquatic Studio Sessions by So George, and you'll sound pretty cool, I think.
Could you pass the cheese, please?
Yeah.
Let's have a conversation. All right, you want some honorable mentions?
Please.
Me and Bobby McGee by Janis Joplin. That is a great cover, and as a matter of fact, that's a lot of people think that she started that song, had that song as a hit for the first time. That's actually written by Kris Kristofferson, and I think Roger Miller was the first one to do a huge release of that. How about Nothing Compares to You by Sinead O'Connor?
Never knew that
better
was a cover.
Better than the Prince version?
Yeah, I do. I love the
better
Prince
than the
version.
Prince version.
Oh, well, we may have to battle on that a little
mm-hmm.
bit, but
okay.
I am a Prince
right.
guy, so I will always lean towards that, but it is a good version. I want to give you, I think I've mentioned this to you before, Gordon. We were sitting in the place in Ventura for Cowboys training camp, walking distance from the hotel. I can't remember the bar. But
Social Tap?
Yes. And Lake Street Drive came on with I Want You Back. And that's a cover of the Jackson 5's I Want You Back. And I never thought I'd like another version of any song that the Jackson 5 put out. You listen to that Lake Street Drive version.
It's Lake Street Dive.
Dive, I'm sorry. Lake Street
Dive. And
they're
awesome.
That version, seriously, is goosebumpy.
I remember that, yeah.
And I had to try to hurry up and get the phone and Shazam it before it went off, and I got it. And I listened to that version more than I listened to the Jackson 5 version of I Want You Back. It is greatness. That is my honorable mention I wanted to put out for you also. But I want to do this again. So if you want to join us for this later on, because there are so many tunes, we can 100% do this again.
Thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Gordon,
awesome,
thank you
Gordon,
so much, man.
Thanks, dude.
Yay, hey, best friend.
Hey, hey, he fades off into the distance. Bye, Gordon.
Yay, bye. Bye, guys.
Oh,
bye.
There you go. Oh, there you go. We will connect. Oh, listen to that.
Someone picked you from the bunch.
Why her voice is so good.
All it took. Oh. Now it's a much too late for me.
That will be on the next version of this. That version is awesome, but let's connect with the Dragon Den. We'll talk to Dan and Jake next.